Turning now to our next topic on this state capitol report. Our guest says Wisconsin residents believe that public schools are underfunded and are willing to increase their property taxes to help support them. We will talk with Dan Rossmiller, the Government Relations Director for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, about the success of dozens of school referendums in last week's elections. And we'll welcome your thoughts, your questions on this. Was there a referendum in your school district? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. How did you vote? How do you feel about higher property taxes to pay for school projects? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Dan Rossmiller, Government Relations Director for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. There were 71 school referendums across Wisconsin last week. Voters approved 51 of them, or about 78%. What message do you think the voters were sending?
Well, I think it's a strong vote of confidence in our public schools, and it's a recognition that in many, many communities around the state, public schools are doing a good job, and people agree with the need for additional funding for schools. What's interesting about the ballot on April 5th was that there were actually more referendums related to construction than there were to exceeding the revenue limits.
And
that's not necessarily been the trend. It's been about 50-50, maybe slightly more referendums on exceeding the revenue limits. But April is a time when schools want to get projects approved so that they can begin working on them.
Yeah, so a couple of big ones passed, including a $92 million request for improvements at the high school in Superior and replacing an elementary school, and a $93 million referendum for renovations to the high school and middle school in Hudson, along with an auditorium and athletic fields. Can you speak specifically to those cases and why they were asking for so much?
Well, again, it seems like a large amount, but keep in mind that this is like a mortgage on your home. It's not paid off all at once. It's an investment in the communities. The schools are definitely a community asset. In the case of Hudson, they're directly across the St. Croix River from the Twin Cities area, and they are growing very rapidly. Therefore, they have a need to build new schools or to improve existing facilities to meet the higher demands and the higher enrollment. In many communities, there hasn't been a big investment in schools since the baby boom generation. We built a lot of schools in the 60s and 70s, and those schools are aging, and they need to be refurbished. In many respects, the way we are teaching today is different. There's less of an emphasis on a library as a central focus of the school, and more emphasis on technology. So, in a way, buildings have to adjust to that as well.
Yeah. In Lake Holcomb, which is northeast of Eau Claire, voters approved a $2 million referendum to cover operating costs through 2019. The superintendent there said if the referendum had failed, the district would have likely had to dissolve. How many districts are in that kind of shape?
Well, there are quite a few around the state. This all goes back to the legislature's decision to impose revenue limits on school districts. And what those revenue limits are, and they've been around since the 1993-94 school year, is an attempt by the legislature to limit how much school districts can raise in property taxes. And they limit a combination of state aid and property taxes, which together form about 80 to 85% of a typical district's overall budget. So with that source of revenue limited, that limits how much a district can spend. And the important thing about those revenue limits are that they are pegged to a school district spending level in 1993, which was before most of us knew what the internet was, and they are pegged to enrollment. So if you're a growing district or at least a stable enrollment district, the revenue that you have available is pretty much stable. But if you're in declining enrollment, your revenue may actually be going down because it's tied to a three-year rolling average of your student enrollment.
We're going to hold it there, and we'll pick up on this point after we check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Dan Rossmiller, Government Relations Director for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. We are talking about all of the school referendums across Wisconsin last week that were approved in ballot questions, in referendum questions, talking about those that passed, and we'll talk some about those that didn't as well. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, Dan, we were talking just before news about Lake Holcomb, which is near Eau Claire, where voters approved a $2 million referendum to cover operating costs. The superintendent at Lake Holcomb said without that money, the district would likely have to dissolve. And we were talking about why districts like Lake Holcomb are in that kind of shape. And you were talking about revenue limits. So is there any chance that, I mean, we have Chris on Facebook who says, are there any plans to look at the school funding formula to see if it can be improved? Is the school funding formula the same as the revenue limits?
Well, not exactly. School funding is a very complicated issue, but and I don't want to get into all of the details here. Revenue limits are a kind of layer on top of the school funding formula. In general, the school funding formula tries to return money to school districts with less ability to raise money locally through the property tax. And it also has a component that tries to hold down costs, but primarily districts with lower property wealth per pupil tend to do better under the school funding formula, and those with high property wealth per pupil tend to get less from the state and rely more on local property taxes. So what revenue limits do is they really restrict how much districts can raise overall from a combination of what they receive from the state and what they can tax locally. And so every district in the state is under revenue limits. Every district has a unique situation under revenue limits. As we were talking before the break, it dates back to where they were relative to other districts back in 1993 when the revenue limits were imposed, what their referendum history has been and what their enrollment history has been. Now, there are a number of districts around the state, and I know one is not too far from Hudson, just down the St. Croix, where the St. Croix and Mississippi meet in Prescott, and they had an operating referendum, in other words, a referendum to exceed the revenue limits that did not pass in February, and reports I've seen there indicate that without that approval, they'll probably have to cut 10% of their budget, which is pretty dramatic. And that's just an example of the kind of things that districts face. Now, under the revenue limit, and I should say that it's my understanding that Prescott is going back to its voters sometime in May to seek approval of a similar referendum. So that they don't have to make those cuts. What the revenue limits really do is force districts, particularly those that have declining enrollment, either to go to the voters and ask them for more money or to make significant cuts in programs and staffing. And we could get into some of the trends that we're seeing in the way those referendums play out?
We can in a moment, but let me, mm-hmm. because we have some callers waiting, let's go to Tom in South Beloit, Illinois. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, good morning. Your discussion involves half of the thing. The people understand that their schools aren't being funded properly, but has anybody gotten into the second half of the thing, which is it's because of cuts in state aid, and it's because of the transfer of state dollars from the public schools to private schools? Is anybody putting those ideas out there?
Dan?
Well, I do know, you began this segment with a question about school funding, and is anybody looking at that? I know that there is a group of Republican legislators who are very interested in this issue, and they've been meeting with the Legislative Fiscal Bureau folks, which is our legislature's budget arm, a nonpartisan agency. The problem is not so much that the formula doesn't work, it's that there isn't enough money being put in to the formula, and it's really a question of how do you get predictable and sustainable funding for schools given the budget constraints that we have. One of the reasons for revenue limits is that there is an agenda to hold down property taxes, and so we've seen the legislature make first a steep cut in revenue limits coinciding with Act 10, and then very modest increases in revenue limits on a per pupil basis as the economy has improved. Those increases in revenue limits have been less than 1% per year when they've been allowed, and this year, this school year, and next school year, there will be no increase in revenue limits. So that adjustment that the legislature normally has made to keep revenue limits in line with inflation has not necessarily been made, and that's one of the reasons that school districts are finding themselves in a pinch.
Are school districts finding themselves in a pinch because more funding is going to the voucher school program, the taxpayer dollars going to private schools?
In the statewide program, it would be hard for me to characterize it exactly. The way that's funded now is that school districts are allowed to increase property taxes to pay for the vouchers for children that live within their boundaries, district boundaries. So what's odd about the voucher funding system is that it seems to be at odds with holding down property taxes. When the statewide voucher program was created, it was funded with state dollars. It was fully funded with state dollars. But now the decision has been made to take aid away from local districts, state aid, and allow them to replace the lost state aid with local property taxes. They don't have to do that, but most of them, I suspect, will want to look at that because otherwise they have less money available to them.
Let's go to Judith in Stevens Point. Hello, Judith.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay. I guess my thought is, we need to, in the state of Wisconsin, get the school spending away from the property taxes. Here in the Stevens Point area, we've lost considerable industry and jobs over the last several years, and with no real job growth, especially replacing the high-paying jobs that were lost, the jobs that have been created or that exist, there really haven't been much creation of jobs. Are lower paying, and people seeing their property taxes being tied to the school spending and their property taxes increasing has meant that people are losing their homes. They can't afford the property taxes anymore.
Yeah, thank you, Judith. Dan, what about that? Is there a sense that we should not be relying on the property tax to fund our public schools so much?
Well, that's been a continuing debate in Wisconsin for many, many years. You'll remember that when Governor Thompson was in office, he pushed for two-thirds funding of schools. We're now somewhere between 62% and 63% of state funding for schools. Some of that comes in the form of property tax credits, so it doesn't necessarily go to the places that are most in need.
Let's move on to the MacGyver Institute. As I look at the clock, we're almost out of time. A free market think tank in Wisconsin said that if every referendum passed, it would cost the state more than $853 million, about a fifth of what Act 10 has saved taxpayers over the past 5 years. Are districts, school districts, relying too much on borrowing instead of finding ways to save?
Well, the borrowing, again, let me go back to the mortgage analogy. When you take out a mortgage, you don't pay that full amount that year. You pay it off in over time. And so to say that it's raising property taxes in any given year is probably misleading. But when school districts borrow, it's generally for construction or large maintenance projects. Schools are investments in the community. They are capital investments. They last a long time, and schools are used in many communities as a community hub. So it's really investing in the communities. It's unfortunate that schools are so heavily dependent upon the property tax. I wish there were better ways to fund them, and we really want to find ways to increase the amount of state aid. That's difficult in tight budgets, and we've heard that the economy is not where we want it to be, that the jobs that are being created, our caller from Stevens Point said, are not at the high wage levels, and so we're not getting the kind of income tax collections that would support more state aid for schools. Yeah. It's a difficult problem.
We have just a minute to go. Voters rejected 16 referendums led by a $47 million request in Grafton. What conclusions, if any, can be drawn from the referendums that lost?
Well, all politics is local, and I'd hate to substitute my judgment for the judgment of local voters, but those were projects, by and large, for construction of facilities, and it may be that the plans included things that some voters found objectionable. It may be that they thought that costs could be lowered. One reason school districts are, I think, are trying to take projects to the voters is that interest rates are low. The economy is such that you can still get lots of construction companies to bid on your projects, and people are feeling a little bit better about their economic situation than they were certainly 4 or 5 years ago. So it's a time when I think school districts are testing the waters to a certain extent, but also because they feel they have needs that need to be met.
You know, we only have 30 seconds. Is it your sense that schools are now going to be funded primarily through referendums? What's the trend in 30 seconds?
Well, the trend is that with regard to operating referendums, we're seeing a tremendous increase in the number of temporary referendums for a period of time. Those are more likely to pass, and what we're seeing is they're becoming shorter and shorter in the term that they cover, so that schools are having to go to the voters more frequently with those referendums and for larger amounts.
Yeah.
I think that's a trend that will probably continue.
We'll talk to you again. Thank you very much for being with us. Dan Rossmiller, Government Relations Director for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards.